Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Another earnings palooza. Alphabet, Microsoft surging, Snap and Roku rocking, but Intel keeps slumping. We're digging in on all of tonight's big movers, dialing into all the calls and bringing you all the trades. Plus, the great yield surge. 10-year Treasuries hitting their highest level since November. As expectations for rate cuts are pushed further down the road, are we heading to a real credit crunch, and what could it mean for the markets? And later, gold glistens. Newmont and Anglo American both surging today, both having their best session since 2020. The headlines driving the moves and the impact on all the miners. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Steve Grosso, Guy Adami, and Kristen Bitterly, Head of Investments at Citi Global Wealth. Welcome, Kristen. Stocks ending the day in the red, but making a big comeback from their worst levels of the day. The Dow down more than 700 points at the lows, ending the day off less than 400. The S&P shedding 0.5%, while the Nasdaq down more than 2.3% at its lows, closing down just over 0.5%. The losses coming after a softer than expected GDP report. But already it's looking like we are in for a big reversal tomorrow. Shares of Alphabet and Microsoft soaring after their latest earnings reports. Google's parent adding more than $300 billion in market cap after announcing its first ever dividend and a $70 billion stock buyback. Let's get more on the numbers with Deirdre Bosa. Debo.
Hey, Mel. So the call is still underway. The Q&A portion should be beginning soon. No surprise, though, CEO Sundar Pichai, he spent a lot of time talking about his AI strategy. And I want to highlight how the company says it's navigating generative AI and search ads. It's cash cow. Pichai says he's encouraged by what he's seeing so far, including an increase in search usage among people who use the new AI overviews. Chief Business Officer Philip Schindler, he went a little further, saying that ads are indeed finding a place in Gen AI products, and he's confident that the opportunity will expand. But Chai also made a point, though, to tell investors that Google isn't just search ads anymore. He noted that YouTube and cloud will exit the year with a combined run rate of over $100 billion, suggesting that growth at those units will increase as well. Now, he's also keeping efficiency front of mind. Investors love this. He noted headcount growth, which was actually a reduction year over year, and monetization. He listed a number of paths to make money from Gen AI products, ads, clouds, subscriptions. But it is probably Google's first ever dividend that is most exciting to investors at the moment and could help relieve some potential anxiety around increased AI spending. As I hopped on TV, I think Ruth Port was just talking about CapEx numbers. So I'll check them out and bring them to you if they're compelling.
All right. Keep us posted. Debo, Deirdre Bosa in San Francisco. How much of that 14% pop do you think, Guy, is the dividend and buyback versus the rest of the quarter?
I think the buyback, $70 billion is not insignificant, but in the scope of the market cap, it's not a huge deal. I think the dividend is a big deal. You get a new class involved. But the quarter is very good. And, margins where I look at the first thing, and their operating margins of their net revenue were up 37.7%. I mean, the street was looking for 33%. Good for them. So we had talked about the potential to break out of those prior all-time highs. Now we're markedly above it. What happens tomorrow? Well, at least you have a place, I think, to trade around in the form of that prior high. And in fact, the breakout we were waiting for, I think, collectively in Google on valuation and a number of things is manifesting itself right now. So good for them. This is a very good quarter.
Kristen.
I would agree with that. I think there's a lot to like in this quarter. You have not only the dividend and share buybacks, but one of the questions that we had coming into this quarter was really around how Gen AI was going to affect the search business. And so I think the results actually answered that, at least for the short term. So I think when you look at the dividends, share buybacks, the overall earnings story, and answering some of those questions around delivering on Gen AI today, as well as investing for the future, that's why the market's reacting the way it is.
Seeing more people use that search tool with the Gen AI overlay, that is very positive. I mean, no more existential threat.
Look, I think the existential threat was overplayed in terms of at least, you know, some of the clumsiness of some of the releases in terms of at least, you know, the new product base and really the lack thereof. But I just think it does get back to the fact that this company continues to execute in their core business. And if you look at the revenue, the top line, I think constant currency was 16% sequentially, you know, better than people had expected, up from 13.5% a year ago. All geographies are executing. It's a case where I think really, again, their core business is executing as it was. And as we saw with Meta and as we've wanted with Google and at different times in the last 4 or 5 years, the cost efficiencies, the ability to generate free cash flow has been a big driver for a company that people have said, hey, look, your core business is highly, highly cash flow generative. I think this dividend is very important. And another $70 billion, as Guy pointed out, I think is a big part of it. I don't think this is half of that performance. I mean, I think these numbers were out. We started to get some more details. You can kind of see how the stock rallied. But of the top three or four of the mega cap seven, I think this is the one that really has the most argument in favor of where it can go in terms of upside.
Plus, when you look at it, though, there's a lot of algorithms that read earnings reports right after the bell. Mm-hmm. So if you see dividend and buyback, people like that, algorithms like that. But the other thing you have to look at is investment. Meta got hit for investment. Will they? They own search. It's over 90% of search. They still have that. How many other AI guys and girls are coming for their basket, their search? Right now, they're not worried about it. They're still top of the hill.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the question is, was Meta yesterday I don't want to say the exception because we've got three data points, but I mean, three of the sort of Mag 7 that are heavy AI plays, right? And Meta was the one that faltered. Alphabet and Microsoft so far look okay. Right. Well, we don't have the conference calls yet. So
faltered
we don't know.
In the sense of the spend and the guide.
In the stock reaction.
That's right.
Yeah, and the stock reaction. Because the quarter in a vacuum was extraordinary. We talked about that last night. So obviously that Facebook move was very Facebook specific. Now and Facebook's not a problem on valuation. We've had that conversation. Mm-hmm. Flip side of the coin is Google's still fine here valuation wise. Microsoft is the one, and we're going to talk about it in a second. That you start to say, this is interesting. I get why it's rallying, but to answer your question, clearly the Facebook quarter was predicated on the spend and probably to a large extent the run-up that it had into it.
Probably wrongfully so, because no one understood what Metaverse was when they got slammed for investing in Metaverse, and then they had the year of efficiency, and now they're talking about investing in AI. I think they should be given a pass with AI because the runway to actual profits and revenue on AI is potentially shorter.
The roadmap is clearer at this point than the roadmap to profits for Metaverse.
Exactly. I think like the challenge was when you talk about that type of spend without clarity in exactly what it is, and it's just generically, I don't want to say generically, but a general AI statement, I think that's what the market reacted to. So the quarter itself was strong, but then guidance is what obviously it sold off on.
And it's interesting just to see what does Meta do with the backdrop today of a very different earnings environment where core business, which Meta, as everyone said, delivered on. I think there's a different interpretation of what they told you on costs. And hey, stay the course. We're going to spend some time. We may not see full outcome or certainly output from some of these investments for a few years. So interesting, 1% move. You'd think maybe it might like it a little bit more. So maybe we can't say that the environment's that different today. But I think there's going to be a bit of a reassessment of Meta.
Yeah, I mean, we might still be hit by a CapEx headline out of Alphabet that we do not like, right? I mean, that is still possibly to come. And we've been down that road before.
No question about it. And they've been beaten up on the back of exactly that. But my interpretation. I think the street is getting more comfortable with the fact that, you know what, they're actually operating much better. Tim alluded to that. And the valuation is still okay. So, and when they put cash to work in the form of the buyback dividend, there's a lot to like here.
All right, let's get to Microsoft now. Shares are popping as well after the company reported a beat on the top and the bottom lines. Steve Kovac joins us now to break down these numbers. Steve.
Hey there, Melissa. Yeah, it's really all about Microsoft's Azure cloud growth here. It continues its acceleration after slipping dramatically over the last 2 years. Microsoft reporting Azure revenue growth of 31% and a chunk of that, 7 percentage points, coming specifically from artificial intelligence running on its cloud. That's up from 6 percentage points in the December quarter. So the story here is AI is increasingly important to helping reaccelerate Azure growth. Beyond that, of course, beats on the top and bottom lines. Total revenues are up 17% from the year-ago quarter. But what's not here in the report? Details on Copilot, the AI assistant Microsoft is selling to businesses. In the release, CEO Satya Nadella only saying Copilot is part of, quote, a new era of AI transformation. So the call is kicking off in about 20 minutes here, and we'll be listening for any more guidance on Copilot there. And of course, like you guys were saying, any more on CapEx increases as well.
All right, Steve, thanks. Steve Kovac, and obviously we'll be looking for the overall guidance for the next quarter and the full year in Microsoft's call as well. We certainly have been down the road where we see it after hours. Stock is acting well, and then we get hit with it. But initial take on the quarter.
I think Azure and that pivot we really started to see last quarter, it wasn't much. It gave the bulls a chance to say that there was actually some inflection point. And this is a serious inflection point, at least, you know, when you want to see where a lot of the real growth is coming from, the fact that AI is 7 points of that growth. You have a dynamic also with $8.5 billion in share buybacks, the ability of the company to actually to at least support the share price, support earnings in a lot of different ways. But every segment, including commercial cloud up 31%, Intelligent Cloud up 21%, that was a beat. O365 up 15%, that was a beat. And the operating margin gained 175 basis points. I mean, that's pretty extraordinary. And again, if you want to pay a higher multiple for Microsoft, which I see it as 34, 35 times, even with these numbers, you have to believe in a margin.
Yeah. Piper's Sandler out with the note just moments ago saying Azure AI crosses the $5 billion run rate in terms of a business. I mean, that's a sizable contribution here.
Steve just said it. Yeah. Steve Kovac just said it, yeah. Right. It was all about once they saw that reacceleration in Azure, 31%, that was off to the races. I mean, the other numbers are what they are. But Tim makes the point, and it, again, at 34, 35 times next year's numbers, you're paying for that growth. Again, we've said it 100 times. Microsoft, one of the top five, if not three most important companies in the world, without question. But you're absolutely paying up for it in this environment.
Is it worth it for this environment, given the uncertainty for stocks, given Treasury yields at 4.7%, in a world where rates might not come down?
That's going to be the question going forward, because really it is priced to perfection. But I think what the market is rewarding right now is in 2023, it was all about you could just mention AI and your stock would all of a sudden react very positively. I think right now it's, do you have tangible gains and tangible productivity and results in your earnings today, not just some promise of the future? And I think where the stock market sees that, it will be rewarded, certainly short term.
Last quarter, they had highest quarterly profit in 2 years. This was a show me quarter. They showed you. It was all about Azure. If Azure beat, the market was going to be up post-close for Microsoft. Let's see what happens tomorrow when they settle in. Mm-hmm. But you could make the case by its market cap that they had the most to prove.
Microsoft.
And this is a great test for them. I don't like where Steve had mentioned that AI went from up to 7% part of that growth versus 6%. You would have liked to see a little more traction, but it's going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. In terms of big seven, whatever you want to call it, but so far, the names that have reported, are they going to be defensive in this environment at these multiples? Have they proven? Well, has Alphabet and Microsoft, let's pick on those two in particular because we had the results tonight.
Are
they going to be defensive?
I think they're defensive when you have these kinds of numbers. I don't know how defensive you can be at some point. And I do think that defensive for mega cap tech stocks that are, look, the kind of growth we're seeing from these companies, it's mid-teens, it's high teens. For multiples, you know, if you're looking at price to earnings growth, PEG ratios, there's different appetite for different levels of valuation. But they are defensive. They've proven defensive in the past. But where have we come from? And what we've started to see in the last 3 weeks to month when the market's running into either exogenous dynamics that are causing people to reassess. Look, the NASDAQ overall, if you want to just do a ratio chart of the triple Qs to the SPY, NASDAQ has not made new highs. And you've actually seen a lot of, you know, pretty negative price action. The only one that seems to be clearly making new highs to me is Google or Alphabet. And I think that's something to watch. But I don't think that these stocks are bulletproof. I mean, at some point, valuation matters.
I would agree with that. I think valuation and fundamentals matter. I think the component, though, that is about, you know, a flight to safety, really focusing on quality, is the fact that these balance sheets are so strong. So when you have that free cash flow generation, these are going to be the stocks that are immune to a lot of the inflationary pressures, which the market will reward. But if you don't follow through on earnings, we've seen it. A lot of companies have been punished.
100%. The valuation suggests exactly. I mean, they've become defensive because as money pours in, that valuation grows. It is a defensive play. And we'll talk about rates later in the show without question. That is going to be a huge component going forward that I don't think the market is paying enough attention to.
All right. For more on Microsoft and Alphabet, let's bring in Fast Money friend Gene Munster of Deepwater Asset Management. Gene, what's your initial take on, you pick, Microsoft or Alphabet?
We'll do Google in one piece. Usually when you're listening to the calls, I just got off the call, you can pick up some context and then look at the stock and see why it's moving. And Ruth Porat, their CFO, said a minute ago that they expect to continue to invest in AI infrastructure and AI talent and expand margins throughout 2024. Now, well, that may have been part of the street expectation. Reiteration of that, in my mind, was a positive, given obviously what we've seen and heard over the last 24 hours. And so I was surprised to not see the stock higher on that. They are doing it both. Google is not only aggressively investing, and it was aggressive. They spent 21% more in CapEx in the March quarter than analysts had expected. And despite all of that, the stock continues to move up. So I would have expected that comment from Ruth Porat to have been an incremental positive. I was picking up some of the chatter on the desk as you were talking earlier, and I think this piece around search, what they are doing, the fact that search growth accelerated, the expectation was 11%. They did 14% growth in search. That's 58% of their business. That, of course, addresses this narrative. And Sundar, their CEO, was quick to point out that their search generative experience, that's their lab where they're testing some of this generative AI within search. They say that it is performing to their thesis, which is the more that people use generative AI, the more actual old school search they do at the same time. And so this seems to be lining up pretty well against the bear case on Google. So that was my takeaway. Felt good about search and felt great about where margins are.
So basically you're saying, Gene, that, you know, Alphabet has indicated that they will spend, they spent more already on CapEx, and they're going to spend even more, but they're still going to expand margins. And that's very different from what we heard from Meta yesterday in terms of the concerns there.
Very different.
Yeah.
They had this big step up from just under $9 billion in CapEx in the December quarter to $12 billion in the March quarter. And Ruth Porat said to expect it to be up and up a little bit and roughly the same. So we don't know. She did say up, but she also talked about roughly the same. So I don't think there's this negative surprise around margins and related to or the CapEx spend. And it does speak to, I mean, they grew CapEx 91% year over year in the March quarter. So they are putting the accelerator to the floor and trying to build the infrastructure. And I just want to point out this unique dynamic around AI more broadly, and this impacts a lot of companies, is this: they're doing the spending with this CapEx, but also they're seeing the revenue growth. We saw in Azure, we saw it in Google Cloud, acceleration of revenue growth. So this is pretty unique when you're seeing this paradigm shift, and both of those are moving in the right direction. I did bury the lead, Melissa, as I've thought about what I saw in the Google and Microsoft CapEx numbers and Microsoft's as I look forward to May 2nd and when Apple reports their quarter. This is going to be their first quarter where they talk about AI in a more substance context. They, of course, have never really brought it up in prepared remarks. And so I suspect that they're going to talk about a major or a significant increase in CapEx related to AI. I would view that as a positive, but I think investors should just have the right lens going into Apple's print. What we're seeing here, Apple's going to have to take that same path because they want to compete in AI too.
All right. Gene, let us know what comes up on these conference calls. Gene Munster.
Thank you.
So we're hearing everybody say that they're going to increase spending on AI. Does that necessarily mean we should transfer that market cap, I'm exaggerating, to NVIDIA?
If you look,
that's what it felt like today.
That's exactly what happened today. So the early weakness in NVIDIA was actually then was bought, and the strength of it manifested. Well, it's on the back of everything that Facebook said last night. So, yes, of course, the problem is, and we've been talking about this for a while, you know, that Friday, March 8th reversal actually wound up being very important. You saw how low NVIDIA traded down to. I think it got down to about 735. Obviously, it has subsequently bounced, but keep that in mind because I think technically we may be looking at a bit of a broken stock here.
I also think it's not just about semis or NVIDIA. It's the broader story in terms of who would benefit. And the market knows this, and these stocks have been rewarded. But everything from electrical equipment to utilities to energy more broadly, data centers, I think you have to kind of look across the board and say, regardless of what happened with Meta or what happened with Google and Microsoft, you're going to see continued flows and continued demand, and that's going to be a really important topic for earnings this season.
All right, coming up, there's a lot more earnings action to bring you this hour with shares of Intel and Snap both making moves. The details for the quarter's next, plus mining maneuvers, the latest on BHP's bid for Anglo American, why the offer may need to be upped, and how Newmont is faring after its results. All that when Fast Money returns.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back. Intel's down 8.5% despite an earnings beat in its latest quarter. The chipmaker's disappointing guidance to blame for the sell-off. Christina Partsenevelis is here on set with more on the results.
It seems like the guidance leaves investors waiting each and every single time. Even on the earnings call, which is going on right now, the CEO reiterated, our target model is reasonable, conservative. If we can move faster, we do better, we will. So he's obviously always trying to hype up the crowd that it's going to get better in the second half. I was able to catch up with the CFO just about maybe 20 minutes after the earnings crossed, and we spoke about the three product lines, PCs, data centers, as well as their networking and edge. He did say that all three categories were suffering from the seasonality that you often see in Q1. He warned that specifically for PCs, we'd probably see the same thing happen in Q2 for servers. The common line, AI is taking all the money, and any type of, he can use those words, for I'm paraphrasing right now, but, any non-AI business is suffering, and he pointed to other players in the industry, and I could think of Texas Instruments, TSMC, that also warned of that. I did ask about specifically the foundry business, because that posted a loss, $2.5 billion in Q1. Last year, the whole year, they lost $7 billion. So you can see that they're already off to a rough start. However, they warned that this is going to be a peak year for losses for the foundry business. And then lastly, he did say that their margins were going to improve. So I said, does that mean job cuts? And he chuckled and said, no, we really believe that things are going to improve in the second half. And then pointed to Mobileye, because margins are better for Mobileye. But Mobileye's business is also down 47%, almost 48% year over year.
So trust us, things will get better in the second half is basically the
precisely. So it's a very back half thing. I mean, ASML was very similar. A few chip names are going that way, like really putting all the pressure on the second half of the year, blaming cyclicality in Q1 and Q2.
How do you interpret this?
And I value having Christina here because it seems to me like we've heard this story before. Yes. And I'm not sure what we heard that was new that was so bad. And you're talking to a guy that I own a small piece of this company, very, very small, fortunately. But what I heard was we didn't think anything good was happening in the short term. When I heard a company reiterate, go out of their way to say, we're actually going to, Q1's the bottom. we're actually going to see sequential growth from here on out. I mean, that's the headline right here.
And that the guide was light. So then is Q on the guide bottom or is Q2 the bottom?
But the CFO is on the tape right now saying something along, we see Q1 as the bottom. And that to me, on top of the fact that they're talking about 200 basis points of margin improvement, they're talking about their, you know, 500 million in sales and their AI, their Gaudi AI chip. I mean, you know, I just think this response is interesting. I'm also someone that said every time this company opens their mouth, the stock goes lower. And this is a perfect example of that.
Seems like they have a credibility issue. I mean, if you hear that from any other company, you would think that the stock would tick higher.
Yes, I'm reading the tape in a vacuum, and I like those headlines.
All right. Well, the tape is the tape, and the tape is telling you something.
Maybe do a few more push-ups this time, right? I mean,
every single time.
Well, because again,
Pat Gelsinger, who's going to be on the call tonight, by the way.
Will he? Well, I'll enjoy watching him do two push-ups. Their data center is a disaster. I mean, it's 18% year-over-year lower. I mean, I'll say this. Client computing, that was actually pretty good, up 30%. But it's the guide. Christina said it. I mean, that second quarter guide, I think, scares a lot of people. And Tim mentioned they see 200 basis points of improvement in margins. The market is saying, you might see it, we don't believe it. That's what it comes down to.
Also, it's, what, 64% of revenue comes from PCs, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's what they have that others don't have, and that's probably what's dragging them down in an overall market where everyone's looking for them to push AI.
All right. Christina, thank you.
They're going to say PC AI. That's going to be their driving force, and the Gaudi 3 chip. Which is $500 million adding in the second half. We'll see.
We'll see how the market reacts to that. Yeah. Christina, thanks. Coming up, more on all the mining moves, why Anglo American isn't digging BHP's offer, and the big jump in Newmont on the back of their results. That's next. And still more earnings action to bring you shares a snap on the move after reporting the details out of the social stocks quarter is next. You're watching Fast Money live from the Nasdaq market site in Times Square. Back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Major moves in the mining world today. Anglo American confirming that it received an unsolicited takeover offer from BHP, with reports the bid could be almost $39 billion. But Reuters reporting the offer might not be sweet enough. Anglo closing the day up more than 17%, its best day since March 2020. Meantime, Newmont seeing its best day since April 2020, the world's largest gold mining company reporting a huge beat on the top and the bottom lines this morning.
Go ahead, say it. That's the A in my clam.
I
know you were dying. Put it up on the screen. Oh, Feinerman's back there in EC. Throw up.
Anyway,
we should tell the people what's going on. Listen, Stan Druckenmiller, 3 months ago, he was getting out of some stocks. He was buying mining stocks. We talked about it on the show. David Einhorn, 2 months ago, talked about buying gold for a myriad of different reasons that we don't need to get into. Now it's all come into play. The mining stocks have completely underperformed. But now they're starting to figure out, you know what, there's something going on here. Layer on the fact that copper is breaking out to the upside. Mm-hmm. And I understand why Anglo is saying, you know what, no thanks. We deserve a much higher price.
Yeah, you have copper breaking out to the upside. Again, going back to these picks and shovels of AI and what's required there. In Newmont, you have solid beats both in terms of production as well as cost. And so if we see continued upside in gold, because I think the interesting thing about gold is when you look at the macro conditions of a strong dollar, high rates, that's not supportive of high gold prices. So anything that would change that, you could see further upside, which obviously would be a tailwind.
I think the operational beat is the most important thing here. I think the miners have been held back over the last 6 to 9 months. People feel they don't have the operational leverage to the higher gold price. In fact, that they actually have a lot of drag from inflation. So the fact that they had better free cash flow at Newmont and it's led to better cash flow, we can all price in what higher gold prices are. This is the part of it that I do think there's just a lag effect in terms of the analyst community finally saying, okay, my average gold price for 24 is going to be $2,300. And that will follow through to just mechanical upgrades. But the biggest thing holding back gold miners watched gold prices go a lot higher and stayed stuck in the mud for this operational reason. If there's an M&A bid to the market, that's even better. And yes, let's talk about copper. Let's talk about other things that are being mined. Other PGMs, prices are going higher. And I think that's, you talk, Kristen, about the break in terms of the historical correlation between a higher dollar and higher rates. And actually, it's actually very, very friendly to miners.
And also, they're going after potash. They're going after metallurgic coal. They're going after, as Kai said, copper. These are all the renewables. These are all the EV. This is all where the puck is going. So that's what they're trying to bring in. But Newmont's been doing the heavy lifting for the miners. So if you look at the GDX, it's 12% of the GDX, and Newmont is up almost 30% for the month. So to Guy and Tim's point, I think gold miners have caught up, and maybe they have a little more room to run.
Coming up, we're digging into today's market action, how this morning's GDP data weighed on stocks and sent yields to their highest levels in months, what the moves could mean ahead of tomorrow's PCE report, and how it could all impact the Fed's next move. Don't go anywhere. More Fast Money in two.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks closing well off the lows of the session, but still down after GDP data came in well below expectations. The Dow falling 375 points. The S&P and Nasdaq both ending three-day winning streaks. Cloud and data security company Rubrik debuting on the New York Stock Exchange today. Shares opening above its IPO price of $32 and closing more than 15% higher. Meantime, shares of IBM down more than 8% after missing on revenue last night. It was the stock's worst day since 2021 and shaved nearly 100% points off the Dow. And Microsoft shares are still higher by about 4%. The call just kicking off. We'll bring you all the details as soon as they cross the tape. Meantime, rates surging after that GDP report. The benchmark 10-year Treasury yield hitting its highest level since last November, ticking close to 4.74% in the session. That after the inflation component of GDP showed an acceleration in the first quarter. You put those two together and the S word comes back.
You're allowed
in
to
the
say
mix.
That?
Stag.
Oh, that. Oh, yeah. I didn't know what you were talking about.
Well, maybe the other S word, too. Depending on how you, I mean.
By the way, what typically would happen there is she'll reference the S word, and one of us morons would say it.
She sets us up like a bowling pin.
I know.
Fourth quarter GDP last year, I think, was like 3.5%. It was half of that this year, on the back of which PCE was probably 2%. It came in, what, 3.7 or so? Mm-hmm. That's not good. That's the story of the day. I get Microsoft was great. I get all those things. This is the biggest story of the day. Now, we'll see tomorrow if PCE verifies that or Galvan, whatever word you want to use. But I'll tell you, the bond market is telling a story. So I'll say again, 4.7, rates are still going higher from here.
Yeah, and it's difficult to really understand this data because you have, I would say most of us are suffering from confirmation bias where you look into the data and what you want to see, you will see. So even with the inflation data, there you had strong consumption. You actually had really strong consumption numbers, which would be supportive of GDP. You could point to imports and how that impacts GDP overall. But we have used car prices that are falling. We have new tenant rents that are down. There are disinflationary forces that haven't quite appeared in the data. So I think the thing tomorrow is really going to be, are we going to see revisions in January, February? Or is this going to look like a reacceleration in March? A reacceleration exclusively in March is different than something kind of balanced over the quarter.
What's your guess?
Well, bad news being bad news for bonds, meaning bond prices sell off, yields go higher, can also be the fact that if the economy is showing signs of weakness and inflation isn't going lower, and in fact, this PCE component certainly showed enough zest to it to say that inflation is very much a factor. But you add that to a week where we've seen some record Treasury supplies, especially in 5 years, that adds up to, again, slower economy means the government collects less money, means people actually read into the fundamentals as credit investors of the U.S. government, and yields start to go higher. And supply is also added to that. So that's the story right now. And I think yields can't go a whole lot lower, even if you started to see a major flight to quality on lower data.
So to have stagflation, you need high unemployment. And we've seen employment hoarding right now. So what breaks that back? What turns that over where you start to see people not just lay off in the mega cap tech, but in the everyday cyclical businesses? We haven't seen that yet. Next month, we're going to hear the Fed talk about maybe cutting QT. So that's easing in effect. That's a little bit under the hood, but it's still easing.
Yeah. What cities are you on where rates go from here?
So I think by the end of the year, we should see anywhere in the ballpark for 10-year between like 3.80 and 4%. So we do see that coming down. a little bit, but I think ultimately you need to see what really matters here is the disinflationary forces. And so the Fed is not going to move unless you see several months, and we're far away from that. So we do anticipate that we'll see some cuts within the second half, but the data has to come through.
What is your scenario where you see rates going higher from 4.7?
The current scenario, issuances, the fact that the market is going to demand a higher yield to buy our debt, which they will, but at a higher yield, and the fact that inflation is still a problem. So the Fed can control, they think they can control the whole, they don't. So they can cut rates all they want. 10-year yields, I think, are still going higher from here.
So in today's action, right, we had yields, you know, I don't want to say close at the highs, but, you know, pretty much up there, right? We saw the markets turn around, and the market turnaround is mainly because stocks turn around. Does that mean that we are okay with higher rates, that we are okay with 4.7%? And only if they go higher, you know, should there be a problem.
It's a fascinating time because I think we're in the middle of earnings season, and I think this is a lot more important. I think the Fed weighs as the heaviest, you know, piece of what's going to guide the market's next move. But I think what we had seen for the last couple of weeks is you are selling a rip. So let's see what the market does tomorrow. I'm just not so sure. I think higher rates are not good for equities. And the fact that there's been resilience up to 470 until there's not.
All right. Coming up, shares of Snap on the move after reporting earnings. That conference call just getting underway. We'll bring you the very latest next. Plus, a pair of big reports out of Big Pharma before the bell. Why Merck is moving higher while Bristol Myers is sitting at 5-year lows right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Snap. Shares are soaring after hours on the surprise Q1 profit. That conference call just getting underway. Julia Borson is here with the latest. Hey, Julia.
Yeah, those shares just soaring in a way we haven't seen Snap shares move higher in the past 2 years after earnings results. So Snap CEO Evan Spiegel talking on the call just moments ago about how they've been working to accelerate and diversify their revenue growth. That is indeed working, with revenue growth accelerating in the quarter to 21% from just 5% revenue growth in Q4. The company's second quarter guidance also ahead of expectations on every metric. Spiegel saying that their AI-driven ad tools are growing to grow engagement and to add revenue. Snap also announced that its subscription service, Snapchat Plus, hit 9 million subscribers, tripled the number last year. That's driving revenue in this other revenue segment. That revenue up 194% in the quarter. Plus, for the first time, Snap gave its full-year operating expense outlook of between $2.43 billion and $2.53 billion. That indicates that spending on AI and infrastructure is stabilizing. I'll be talking about all of this and more with Snap CEO Evan Spiegel coming up tomorrow morning in Money Movers. Back over to you.
All right. Julia, thank you. Julia Borston. Yeah, I mean, it's always up 20-something. What,
you know, flip a coin, it's going to be up 25 or down 25. I've never seen anything like this, this company. And it's, I don't think it's a compliment in terms of people being this far off sides in terms of where their expectations come in. What's most important for Snap is not just that they beat in terms of the revenue number was 21% versus 13 expected, but the adjusted EBITDA, and you can blow holes through adjusted EBITDA because it is just that adjusted, but it was expected to be down about 68 million and they came in up plus 45. I mean, the profitability is significantly different than people had expected, and this is something that is absolutely the driver here.
It's interesting to hear them say that spending on AI infrastructure is sort of ceasing, is stabilizing now, as the others, everybody else is ramping, which is a real contrast.
It's interesting what Tim said. You could drive a truck through their guidance, which is one of the reasons why. But I'll say this is only in, you know, looking back. It makes sense that Snap had this quarter because the Facebook quarter was really good. So it actually makes sense that Snap had a good quarter. If you start to connect the dots, the only thing that really hurt Facebook was the spend. Not that I connected those dots last night. It does anybody no good tonight. With that said, you know, ARPU.
Yes.
Average revenue per user.
283, and the street was looking for 260. A lot of things to like here. And their road to profitability is getting a lot closer.
Mm. But the whole TikTok headlines should have been a tailwind to Snap. We didn't see that happening. So just looking on a technical basis, if you go back to February, where it fell off a cliff from 17.5 all the way down to the lows, it's retraced more than half of that. So if you look at where it's trading post-close, look for that 17.5, and that's where you trade it between where it is now, hopefully hopefully it holds, and 17.5 the February level.
All right, meantime, a tale of two pharma stocks as Merck and Bristol Myers head in opposite directions after posting results before the bell. Bristol Myers dropping to its lowest levels since 2019 after it reported a quarterly loss thanks to its $14 billion acquisition of Karuna Therapeutics. The company also announcing it will lay off more than 2,200 employees as part of a plan to cut $1.5 billion by 2025. Merck, meantime, gaining nearly 3%, fueled by a top and bottom line beat, strong full-year guidance, and 20% year-over-year growth in its cancer drug, Keytruda. So investors are looking, are sifting through healthcare, really, and looking for the values.
Yeah, and listen, Keytruda up almost 20% year-over-year is a big deal, and they raised their full-year guidance, which they should have given this quarter. I mean, it's not a cheap stock, but it's by no means an expensive stock, especially when compared to Eli Lilly. I get it. They're in completely different businesses in terms of GLP-1, understood. But when you're talking about Merck, which trades at half the market cap of Lilly and does about $17 billion more revenue, $68 billion versus $51, you can understand why Merck's rallying here.
And I think that's one of the major themes we've been watching. We like healthcare, we like biotech, we like some of the broadening out of the rally away from the GLP-1 drug makers. And so I think that's exactly what Merck has shown here with Keytruda and the 20% increase in sales year over year. So it's the market saying that there are other diseases and other conditions to treat, and we should continue to watch that.
Coming up, the picks are in, and that means it is time to grade the 2024 stock draft. How does Karen's lineup rate against the field? We will dig into that next. And here is a sneak peek at the Cramer Camp. Jim is chatting exclusively with the Waste Management CEO. Catch a full interview at the top of the hour on Mad Money. Meantime, more Fast Money in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Top, the picks for the 2024 CNBC stock draft are in. New York Liberty basketball star Breonna Stewart partnering with none other than our own Karen Finerman. Their team, Money Machines, had the very first pick in the draft this year. They took Meta, and in the second round, they were hoping for Warner Brothers Discovery, but Kenny the Jet Smith got that stock first. So they pivoted to DraftKings. So, Karen, Meta was the worst performer in the S&P 500 today, but that actually factored into why you picked that first.
It did. It actually was a game time decision because going into today, that was not what was going to be our first pick. But given the dramatic response to the earnings, and, you know, I'm thinking that Zuckerberg deserves the benefit of the doubt, maybe this is our opportunity. Let's take it.
Tim was a color commentator.
How'd he do?
Today. He was all right, but I was going to ask Tim to grade Karen's picks.
No,
Tim was
look,
great as usual.
I think all right is good enough sometimes around here. I thought Karen did a great job. Again, that stock draft is one of the great events in sports and markets all wrapped up into one. And Karen and Breonna had to do what happens and will happen tonight in the NFL draft. In your war room, you adjust on the fly. You tried to trade up. Maybe someone takes one of your picks. And I thought they did a great job. I mean, Karen, we know, loves Meta, right? We know this is a company that on some weakness, she would be buying more. So that's essentially what they did. She's already up 1% in the after hours. In terms of DraftKings, instead of WBD, you know, there are many people that think that Warner Brothers is going lower and lower and lower. It's certainly been a broken stock, a broken company. Kenny the Jet, I thought he did a great job today. He made a lot of sense. He's betting where his career is. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a guy who's on TNT. He's doing a great job there.
And he picks Warner Brothers.
And he picks Warner Brothers. So I'm not surprised, but it was a little bit of gamesmanship. And I don't know if whether he snuck in late into the contest so he could actually, you know, edge her out. We'll have to figure this out. There might be some controversy behind the scenes here.
There's a lot of allegations of wrongdoing and being conflicted and all that sort of stuff in this draft. So it was very juicy. But Karen, in terms of the earnings tonight, you, of course, are an owner of Alphabet. What did you make of this quarter?
Very delighted to see this quarter. A little bit surprised as well. Certainly, you know, the big buyback, that was nice. The dividend, that was interesting and good. But clearly, it was just the underlying business. Guy touched on it, the margin improvement, because I have been watching you from the control room, which is really fun. I suggest you all do it at least one time. But a lot to like, and it's not surprising, given how Meta talked about how much spend they were doing, that those cloud providers that sell compute were going to have good quarters. So it makes sense.
Yeah, and in terms of Microsoft, are they proving that they deserve this valuation?
Mostly-ish, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's interesting, though, that still the comparison of the PE multiple for Google versus Microsoft, still too wide, in my opinion.
Were those your real, I mean, were there other stocks on the board that you were thinking about picking?
Yes, there was. Tesla for the turnaround story there. Yeah. That was one of them that I think, you know, you kind of had to consider. And I think Google, but it wasn't really high enough up there. And then sort of an outlier, First Solar.
Yeah, that's another sort of one of these battered stocks that could see a huge pop in the next year. Karen, that was fun today in EC.
I love doing it with the number one pick herself, Breonna Stewart. How fun is that?
Exactly. That was very exciting.
Go Liberty.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks.
See you tomorrow.
Ciao.
Up next, Final Trades. Another check in tonight's earnings, and we're still holding strong in terms of the gains from Alphabet and Microsoft. Of course, the Alphabet call did wrap up. The Microsoft call is still going on. It's up 5%, but we are still waiting the guidance, and that could be really key. The company did say that about 60% of Fortune 500 companies now use Copilot and that it is seeing acceleration in the number of large Azure deals. Snap, by the way, is up 23%, and Intel is struggling, down by 7.7%. Time for the final trade. Tim Seymour and guests.
Yeah, I've got a friend here. It's Evan, who's the son of our set supervisor, Nancy, and it's family day at CNBC, and he wanted to say Goldfields, GFI, for the win.
Good job, Evan. Kristen.
XLE, I think both in terms of hedging geopolitics and inflation, as well as the free cash flow generation of these companies.
Steve.
Meta.
Guy.
My man ET told me ExxonMobil.
Thanks for watching Fast. Mad Money starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.